Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As we begin the program, I just want to say to you, please stay tuned for all the details of Brexit, because I'm confident Tom will provide us with a clear understanding of what's taking place there in the UK with in relationship to Brexit. And we'll totally bring us up to date, and will give us probably the conclusions of all the political machinations associated with Brexit. So with that as the announcement and promise to Tom, who will be working feverishly as we begin the program to figure out how to solve the statement I just gave him, we go straight to Tom Arms, London, England. And Tom, good afternoon to you, and how's the weather there in your fair state?
It's pretty miserable.
Oh, how so?
The skies have descended. They're about 10 feet above your head. They're metal gray. Winter is starting to settle in.
I'm curious. You say the skies, the clouds are just above your head. Are we looking at, are we talking?
No, it's not fog. It just feels that way. It feels as if it's sort of, in the winter, it feels as if the clouds are just, everything's gray. And of course, everyone puts on their tweeds to keep warm, and it can be very depressing here in the winter.
As a matter of fact, that was my next question. And is this where the term, and it's not, but the British term stiff upper lip, is this one of those situations where you?
No, I think the stiff upper lip came from somewhere like Dunkirk.
Oh, it did.
But if you think of the song "Home, Home on the Range," and they refer to where the clouds are not. Where the skies are not cloudy all day.
Right.
What they're talking about is the mother country.
So it's going to be a little damp and wet, but at the same time, it's typical London weather then.
Yeah. Right. It's when the sun comes out, it's really lovely here because the grass is so green and everything is so fresh. But when the sun goes down for the winter and we have the long nights and everything else, it can be very difficult.
Well, I can appreciate that. We're waiting patiently for winter weather. We're still having some summer-like weather, which we're enjoying, of course. Tom, let's start with the events there in the European community in relationship to the United States. And I think I would like to start with just the continuing coverage, if there's coverage, on the issue of the predetermined issues on the part of the Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives on impeachment. What coverage is there? Is that continuing to be above the fold discussion and coverage there in the U.K.?
Yes, especially this testimony from Ambassador Bill Taylor.
Uh-huh.
That is seen as extremely damning. In fact, the BBC ran another opinion piece on it saying, here it is. Here's the quid pro quo. Here's the proof.
Mm-hmm. Well, but this is, the whole issue of, let's talk about this in relationship to diplomacy for a moment. And quite frankly, to be candid, the Europeans are noted for their diplomatic endeavors. That's where it really begins. But the question is, we have heads of state that are constantly communicating, and I would argue, doing a little horse trading, verbally speaking. Maybe in some instances there would be some paperwork actually transferring, but seldom, more verbally speaking, of horse trading. And I'm wondering, is this perceived that this has never happened there in the European community?
What doesn't happen is, it's a case of the horses that are traded.
Right.
In this case, it seems, allegedly, that the horses that were traded were for personal political gain on behalf of Trump in return for American government money. He used American government money, held it back, military aid, or so it's alleged, held back government military aid in order to get the Ukrainian government to launch an investigation against his political opponent.
But my point is
that is not done.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry, Lockwood. It is not done. Between Europeans, that is considered illegal. And I think you find that if you really look at Constitution, it would be interpreted the same way in the U.S.
No, I would argue quickly that this has been ongoing, and the other aspect of this, but we have no proof of that. But I contend that it's been ongoing, and it's typical of diplomacy. But the other aspect of this, and it goes back to a question I've asked in the past, in light of the fact that the president's conversations have been made public. Would that not concern others in the European community? Because I'm confident that when the prime ministers are talking to one another, they're doing so, privately and securely. And this is an indication that there's no security within the White House and within Washington, D.C.
Well, there's been a lot of conversations about Brexit going back and forth. And some of them are made public and some of them aren't.
Okay. All right. Well,
so you certainly have a point there, but you know, as I said, some are made completely public, and some are kept secret.
Well, let's talk about other items here associated with the U.S. for a few moments. Of course, the topic of the G7 and the fact that the president has now relocated the G7 to, I think it's Camp David, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
What's the opinion of the community there?
Well, they see it as Trump. They see it as part of Trump being on the skids a bit. That he's had to, you know, this was very important to him to have it at his golf course, and you know, a lot of people thought it was not right, but he's always doubled down and held fast on things like this, and he seems to have given in quite early. To the criticism, and perhaps the reason is because he's been criticized so heavily in other areas such as Syria and Turkey and also the Ukraine and the Bidens, and that he couldn't afford to have more criticism, and so he just moved the venue.
That's an interesting observation, and I find that interesting in the sense that you see this as, if you will, a show of weakness. But at the same time, one would argue, and has been argued, that it was an issue of distraction, and that the president was, lofting that idea or that effort to distract the public. That's one of the arguments being presented here. Let's talk here about the G7 for a few moments. How influential is the G7 as it's apparent now?
At the moment, not very influential at all. The last meeting, the G7, didn't even issue a communique.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting before that issued a communique, but it was immediately rebutted by Trump. And to be honest, one of the reasons why, if you speak to the Europeans, one of the reasons why the G7 is not effective is because President Trump will not agree with anything anyone else puts forward. That he's blocking things at the G7 summit.
He's a
especially on climate change, which is very important to them, and we'll be coming to that later.
A contrarian to a large degree as well. All right, the fact that they've moved the venue from the Doral Country Club to the Camp David. What's the opinion of that site? And by the way, just a note here. Historically, the G7 has generated to some degree a certain degree of protests. Is this an indication that maybe the G7 would like to get down to some serious business? Is there a feeling of that nature?
No, I don't think so. I think this is the second time I think it's been held at Camp David.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Camp David is very isolated, so they can keep the protesters away. You know, and it is really made for summit meetings like this. You know, it has a log cabin, so each delegation can have their own separate log cabin, and they can have their own separate meetings. They can walk around in the woods and chat and things like that. So, you know, Camp David is almost specifically designed for summits like G7.
And by the way, related to that, is there any anticipation of significance coming out of this? Is there any discussion, and it's a little premature, but any discussion of a particular agenda item or possibly a goal?
No, it's a year. It's almost a year away.
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be in June.
Right.
And so they wouldn't even be thinking about the agenda yet.
Okay, it's just fascinating that, of course, the venue became the topic of discussion. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World. This portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate not only a sleeping schedule, but an upcoming interview that he's going to be doing here in another few minutes right after this program is recorded. So stay with us as we get to other issues with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As promised, coming up in a few moments, Tom's clarity on the issue of Brexit. But before we get to that, Tom, let's talk about the situation there with the events in Syria, the president's announcement, of course, of removal from troops from Syria, and, of course, now the announcement that Russia and Turkey are going to be doing the protective, they're going to be providing military support for the protective area there in northern Syria. I'm wondering how Syria is going to accept this, but what is the news there in the European community?
Well, they're very disturbed, and they're disturbed about several things. Some of it is sort of symbolic, which is Trump saying, "Oh, we will keep some troops in there, but not protect Kurds, but to protect the oil wells, mm-hmm. Because we need the money from the oil," and that doesn't go over very well, you know. From a morality point of view, the other thing is, of course, that you're right. The Russians or Putin and Erdogan have agreed to join forces to clear out that strip of land, 20-mile wide strip of land on Syria's northern border of Kurds. Mm-hmm. And Kurds are being told to leave. Also being told to leave, and so far I believe it's almost 200,000 people who've been displaced.
Refugees, yeah. That is.
Yeah, refugees. Erdogan, how does Syria take this? I think Syria needs Russia. So I think that they will swallow it. I think Assad will simply swallow it because it desperately needs the Russian military support if they're going to stay in power. And this, of course, opens up the, as I said last week, opens up more possibilities for Putin in the Middle East. He is able to project himself as a mediator and an honest broker, a man who solves problems instead of creates problems, and that's how he's being viewed. He has good relations with Syria, obviously. He actually has good relations with Israel. He has just been on a state visit to Saudi Arabia. He has good relations with Iran, good relations with the United Arab Emirates. He has been on a charm offensive, and it's starting to pay dividends for him.
Is that not a good thing?
Well, we discussed this yesterday, you know, I mean, not yesterday, last week. And the answer is, do you really want Russia having control over or having a heavy influence over an area which has traditionally been influenced more heavily by the United States, especially as it is not only full of oil, but it's strategic in geographic terms as well, and that it gives Russia the potential to move out of the Black Sea to a warm water port.
But here's the kicker, Tom. One would ask, where is the rest of the Western communities, the Europe, where are they in this discussion? Should they not be also playing a role in this? Why is it always...
Well, I think they are playing a role. They're not playing as big a role as the United States, obviously. They're not as wealthy as the United States. They don't have as big an army. And, you know, even if you take the ones that have the 2% GDP, like the United Kingdom, there's still their army is a fraction the size of the United States because they're just smaller countries. And what's happened is they haven't been consulted either. They simply were told, we're moving out tomorrow. And a vacuum was created. There was no planning. There was no consultation. And that is, so you can't really accept them to step in just at a moment's notice like that.
Well, there's a frustration here in the U.S. that so much is falling on the shoulders of our military, but also our worldwide political activities. That
well, if you don't want to be a superpower anymore, say so.
Well, and by the way, I would argue there are a lot of folks that are resentful of the U.S. Power and influence. So, you know, you can't win for losing. All right, Tom, let's move on to other items. And let's stay close to home for a moment. Canada, I do want to get to Brexit here very quickly, but I'll tell you what, let's put Canada aside. I want to go to Brexit for a few minutes because I think it's an important story. You're going to provide us with clarity and a timeline and everything will be fine. Am I correct on that?
Probably not. I mean, nobody knows anything about clarity. It's still up in the air a bit. There are so many unknowns still. What's happened this week is that actually Johnson, Boris Johnson, got it further than Theresa May did.
Uh-huh.
He actually got Parliament to agree on the first reading, or actually it's called the second reading, of the EU withdrawal bill that he negotiated with the Commission. All right? So that was, it sort of agreed in principle, but without any amendments, because that comes later. So amendments could completely change it and make it unacceptable. But then Parliament said, well, we need more time to think about this. We need time to debate it because you've only given us 3 days to scrutinize this legislation and pass it. And that is one of the main jobs of Parliament, is to scrutinize legislation. Legislation is initiated by the government. All legislation in the UK is initiated by the government, but has to be scrutinized, approved, and passed by Parliament.
Okay. Basically, in the US, be congressional approval. But here's a question for you. There is a deadline, October 31. What's the status of that deadline in light of the fact that there's been some movement and approval from the EU on a possible exit from the European Union by the by Great Britain? What happens to the deadline?
Okay, the EU, well, first of all, the Parliament insisted that Boris Johnson write a letter saying that if we don't have a deal by the 19th of October, we want an extension of that deadline. He wrote the letter but refused to sign it, and then wrote a second letter saying he'd rather not extend it anyway. But the European Commission doesn't want a no-deal arrangement. They don't want them to leave without a deal on the 31st of October. So they have decided that they are going to accept the unsigned letter and offer the extension, or give them an extension. Now, the extensions on the table is to extend the negotiations until the 31st of January, which a lot of people say, oh, that's too long. You know, we've agreed the bones of an agreement. Let's get it over with. It's too long. And so they're going to make it a sort of flexible extension is what they're talking about. So that the latest that it can be passed by Parliament and agreed is the 31st of January.
Uh-huh.
But if they agree before that and pass it through Parliament, then they can leave at that time.
All right. One of the issues that we have talked about for years now, Tom, and this has been going on for a long time, has been the concern associated with businesses and the industries that do international process and international business there that are homeported in the UK, particularly London. What's happening to those businesses? Are they continuing to exit the country, or are they getting comfortable with the, shall we say, the new environment?
Well, they don't know what the environment is, so okay. They're continuing to exit the country. A lot of these are either financial institutions, or they are manufacturing, in particular car manufacturing, and they are moving to the continent. The reason why car manufacturing is moving and other manufacturing is that so many parts are are manufactured in different countries,
right,
and they go back and forth across borders until they're eventually assembled in one country.
Right.
And, of course, what will happen with the EU is that if the windscreen wipers and the tires are made in France, when they're brought to Britain to get the axle, they'll have to pay a tariff.
Mm-hmm. All right.
When they go back to be assembled in Germany, they have to pay a tariff again.
Okay. Real quick question for you, and we'll take a break here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio joining us from London, England, where he's failed to provide a full clarity, but he's come close on the issue of Brexit. My question to you,
Thank
Tom.
Thank you.
Well, close is good enough for today. The question goes to the morale of the country. Now that there seems to be, as they say, light at the end of the tunnel, whether it's daylight or an oncoming train is yet to be determined, but we know we're coming to the end of the tunnel. My question to you is, what's the morale like? What's the attitude there in the UK? Are people settling down?
It's terrible.
Really?
The country, all the opinion polls indicate the country is still split almost 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And both sides, Remain and Leave, are becoming more and more entrenched.
Okay.
But at the same time, both sides are fed up with how long it's taking.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to get back to normal life.
Do they hold the European Union or the Commission responsible for that, or do they see basically the problem being homegrown?
Most people see it as being homegrown, but of course there are some people who say it's the fault of the European Commission.
Okay.
But most people, I would say, if you take a poll, would put the blame squarely on the shoulders of Parliament.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And there's a good possibility that we will have an election before Christmas, and the issue will be the people versus Parliament, the people being represented by the likes mm-hmm. of Boris Johnson.
Well, we'll be paying close attention to that. We'll get more drama coming from the United Kingdom. With our guest this afternoon, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
LookAhead Radio will return in just a moment. Now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Tom, let's talk about other items happening there in the European community, but also around the world. But first question goes to the topic, and since we were just chatting a moment ago about Brexit, we're seeing a lot of stories about the difficulties within the royal family. Harry and Meghan, William and Kate are not getting as much coverage, but Prince Harry and his bride Meghan are getting a lot of coverage here, even in the States, over, some frustrations, apparently, a bit being a royal. What's the feeling there in the UK?
Well, the feeling is it's all very sad, and everyone is very upset. It seems as if William... The issue really is how to handle the media.
Mm-hmm.
One person once said that a normal person can be guaranteed of death and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're royal, you can be guaranteed of death or taxes, the tabloid media, and death.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I mean, they are the royal family here is the most famous family in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they are every footstep, every statement is watched with scrutiny.
Now, they
really can't put a single toe wrong.
Oh, well, I understand that. But real quick question. Obviously, they're getting a lot of coverage outside of the European community, outside the UK. And I'm wondering, within the UK, do people just sort of take it in stride? Are we too fascinated with...
No, they don't take it in stride.
Really?
The memory of Princess Diana is very real.
Okay. And that is their mother.
They are afraid of a repetition. That's what Prince Harry's afraid of.
That is.
That Princess Diana was basically dogged to death.
Right.
And they're concerned the same thing will happen to Meghan. Now, part of it, they think, is the way the two brothers are handling the media.
Mm.
William has come to terms with the media and sees it as a way of getting the message out, mm-hmm. whatever his message may be. And he has a very good relationship with the media. His wife, Kate, just does the job of consort.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Harry, he sees the media as an enemy.
Oh.
The media killed his mother. The media is attacking his wife. And so he is attacking back. And to be quite honest, you can't beat the media.
Right.
They're not going to stop reporting everything they do.
Harry could give a call to President Trump to get more details on that. All right, moving on to other items. Since we are talking about royalty, let's talk about the new Japanese emperor.
Ah, Emperor Naruhito. Yes, he was enthroned this week.
Mm-hmm.
He actually ascended back in May when his father, Akihito, decided to abdicate because of ill health. The emperor in Japan has absolutely no political power at all.
Right.
He doesn't meet with the prime minister or anything else like the queen does. He is totally symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been ever since 1947 when MacArthur forced the constitution, the current constitution, on the Japanese and took away the emperor's godlike powers.
Right. But at the same time, what's the value then of the emperor? And why does Japan still maintain this royalty?
Well, I think it's basically, you know, it can be seen in the pledge that he gave.
Ah.
When he was enthroned this week. And basically he said, I promise to fulfill my pledge to act as a symbol of unity.
Okay. That's
for my country.
I think
that's what he does.
All right. Looking at leadership roles, let's talk about Canada and Mr. Trudeau.
Ah, yes. Did he do well or did he do disastrously?
Well, he survived.
Somewhere in between, isn't it?
Well, he survived. So, and he has a minority. He has a minority leadership, correct?
He has a minority leadership, but he's certainly in power.
Right.
And you know, usually, you know, the whichever party's in government gets the blame for everything that's wrong,
mm-hmm.
and so they're expected to lose some seats. Of course, it was a really tough campaign. It was a dirty campaign.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, everyone,
but
most people accept
but,
that.
But,
it was
but
a pretty
a
dirty
second.
Campaign.
But at the same time, it Trudeau had problems early on in his campaign, or pardon me, in his administration, when one of his staff was involved in, I'm trying to remember, some financial activities that were...
Yeah, it was a financial activity. Yeah, and the... Indigenous American cabinet
right.
minister had to quit.
Yep.
And everything else. It was things were really going against him. And in a way, the fact that he survived is a triumph for his policies.
Yeah.
And I think you can count on things like climate change, for
mm-hmm.
instance, moving further up the agenda in Canada, because that was a big thing. For Trudeau.
Let's talk about that in relationship to two other stories related to the issue of, the climate debate and, if you wish, the climate change agenda. Green Party surge in Swiss election. How important is that?
Yeah, it's an indicator.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Green Party in Switzerland was nowhere, was absolutely nowhere. And it has just sort of emerged, immediately, completely on the back of climate change, and in the Swiss elections there, has managed to get 20% of the vote. So they've gone from almost zero to 20% of the vote, with representation in the Swiss parliament. Now, of course, you know, the Swiss are a mountainous country. or mountainous people, and they're looking up and they're seeing all these glaciers or glaciers melting.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, they're seeing mudslides come down on top of mountain communities as a result of warming, climate warming, global warming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just Switzerland. You know, this is the whole thing. It's right across Europe. And now I think you could include Canada in that too. So, you know, for instance, in the latest European elections, the German vote for the Green Party was 20%.
I think
they now hold 10% of the seats in the European Parliament. In the Finnish recent elections, it was 16. They got 16% of the vote, and in the French, they got 15% of the vote, and in Austria, they got 14% of the vote. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but
no.
They were much lower.
No. I would argue with quickly, and we'll move on to other items because we'll bring up the Congolese rainforest next here in a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I would contend that the information you're providing us is an indication of momentum, and it's
yes.
a growing issue. So I think this is something that we should be listening to, and that's one of the reasons why I enjoy having you every Wednesday with us every Wednesday afternoon. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, sharing with us what's happening around the world. We get so focused on our own community, Tom, that we are not paying attention as we should about what's happening around the globe. Let's talk about the Congolese rainforest.
Yeah. That is the second largest rainforest in the world after mm-hmm. the Amazon.
Right.
And apparently it's having not quite the same problems as the Amazon because the Amazon is burning.
And it's burning because of the indigenous people now, just to remind you of that. It's burning because the rainforest, the Amazon rainforest, is burning because of the indigenous people, and I mean the representatives of those various countries, Brazil, etc. They're setting the fires to increase the number of farming areas.
Yes. Well, what's happening in the Congo
uh-huh.
is that they're basically destroying the rainforest through logging operations.
Uh-huh.
And so they're chopping down the trees. It's not so much for farming, but they're chopping down. It's big multinational companies who've moved in, and there is no government to speak of to control these operations. The country is just torn apart by civil war, and so these multinationals can just move in and do more or less whatever they want. They can do mining operations as well. There's some oil operations, and the Congolese rainforest is decreasing almost at the same pace as the Amazonian.
And my question to you before we move on to another item very quickly is what can be done about this?
Well, I don't know what can be done about it, because what you really need is some sort of regulation, some sort of government which can go in there and
okay.
prevent these people from carrying out illegal activities.
But
there is no government.
Because of the civil war. And we've talked about the role of Africa in the world politic, and particularly in the economy, in the world economy. Before we go to the break, let's touch on one other item. We were talking about world leaders. And, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu, if you've got a note here, has given up trying to form a government in Israel. So what does that mean for Israel?
Well, it means that Benny Gantz is now going to try and form a government. And he is speaking with the Arab members of the Knesset
mm-hmm.
To join him in a coalition, which would be very unusual. I don't think we've had Arab members in a coalition government in Israel ever.
Hmm.
That will still leave him 12 seats short of a coalition government or of enough members of the Knesset to form a government. So
right.
it's by no means certain that he'll be able to do it. But if he does, that will put a completely different complexion on Israel's foreign policy, because Benny Gantz is far more liberal in his outlook than Benjamin Netanyahu.
And real quickly, as we prepare to go to the break, what's the future of Benjamin Netanyahu in light of the fact that he's also being indicted?
Yes, and I think the result will be that he might have to spend some time in prison.
Ooh. All right, Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio coming up in just a moment. Always the final note of the day, National Bologna Day. But there's another story we want to touch on before we even get to that. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're going to find out about National Bologna Day in just a moment. But before we do that, Tom, I understand that you are, as a result of your regular appearances here on Viewpoints, and of course, this is Smart Radio, as we like to call the program, Smart Radio, WTKF, WJNC. You are now an international source for information, and I understand you're going to be on an international TV segment. Tell us what's going to be happening with you later today.
Oh, well, the Iranian television wants me to try and explain Brexit, just like you do.
Oh, okay, so this is a warm-up for Iranian TV. I'm fascinated. What is the interest of Iran in Brexit in light of the fact that they're not members of the European Union?
Well, I mean, basically, Brexit has taken Britain out of the foreign policy field for 3 years.
Oh, really?
You know, we haven't made any major foreign policy initiative. We haven't really been involved in any major foreign policy discussions. And Britain is a country which historically has always been interested in the rest of the world, needs to be, given the fact that something like 70% of its trade is exports.
And because it's also a major, a major naval power, a naval community.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact,
it is very much involved in the Middle East militarily. It is involved in intelligence gathering in the Yemen, and also, you know, intelligence gathering for the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates. It has very good relations with Bahrain and Kuwait. It was the colonial power there. And it has big investments. Mm-hmm. In both Iran and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and UAE in terms of oil.
Now, I this may be a bit of a stretch, but does that indicate that Iran is working to reassociate itself with the rest of the industrial world? Iran has been very much an isolationist a country.
Iran has been trying ever since the collapse of the Iran nuclear accord, mm-hmm, to try and establish better relations with the European members of the accord. Most of that has been rooted through Emmanuel Macron in France, but they would certainly like to have better relations with the UK as well.
Okay,
because they want to find a way to get around the Trump sanctions.
Okay.
And in order to improve the Iranian economy.
Can we assume that it's starting with you, with your appearance on Iranian TV?
That would be nice. Yeah. I think we can assume that. Yes.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, let's wrap it up with National Bologna Day. Let me ask, would this happen to be somewhere in Italy?
No.
Ooh.
That is the correct spelling. I was hoping you'd say it exactly like that. That is the correct spelling for baloney.
Right.
Because baloney, it's pronounced baloney, but spelled Bologna.
Right.
Baloney comes from Bologna, Italy.
It's Italy, right. So that's why I've wondered if this is a National Italian Day.
No, it's National Bologna Day.
Oh.
So, yeah, bologna sandwiches.
Okay. And by the way.
And it's tomorrow.
It is tomorrow. Well,
it's tomorrow.
You know what's interesting?
And I'm not talking a load of bologna.
I was going to say that a lot of people are thinking that this is, this program is, well, we won't go there. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. By the way, are you going to be there for that day?
What, for, in Bologna?
Yeah, Bologna.
Oh, I should be, actually. No, I shall be driving my wife to the airport as she is flying off to New York.
Oh, well, you could fly off to Italy. I mean, it's just a hop, skip, and jump.
That's
for
true.
You.
That's true. It's just around the corner.
It is. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us this afternoon. We will be paying close attention to Iranian TV. As a matter of fact, what we want to make sure is that we get a segment of that on our website here at Viewpoints, and of course the talk station WTKF WJNC. Tom, as always, pleasure talking with you, and look forward to next week. I'm sure that we'll have all the details of Brexit at that point.
I doubt it, but we'll hope so.
Viewpoints around
Thank you very much.
Viewpoints around the world here on the talk station FM 107 AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.